What are you doing?
What? Ah, jeez.
I'm working on a promo for Anna.
She needs
Not for her, for the travel agency. It's about time. A time travel adventure.
That's not much.
I'm still working on it. I'm having trouble with this recording equipment.
Where's the camera?
There is no camera. It's audio.
You mean this is for radio? Wait, is this going to be on NPR?
No, bigger. A podcast with a worldwide reach.
Marc Maron is going to play a promo for you?
Not Marc Maron. The Audio Drama Production Podcast.
Never heard of it.
It won an award in the UK.
Is that big?
Well, their mums think it is. Anyway, it's these two Scottish guys, Robert and Matthew, and they talk all about audio dramas. It's pretty good. I especially like the guy who sounds like the Hobbit guy.
You mean Bilbo?
No. The other trilogy.
Frodo.
No, the young Hobbit. Pippin.
Oh, I like him. Cute as the Dickens.
Yeah. Anyway, I need to give them a good intro, because, well, that's the only way to get noticed in this field. But I'm having a little trouble getting this piece of crap to record anything. It won't turn on.
What's the red light for?
Well, when it comes on, it means it's record... Son of a...
Hello and welcome once again, Audio Drama Production Podcast here. Robert, Matthew, and special guest, Michel LaFrance. Hello, folks.
Hello.
He's here. He really is here.
Yes.
Michel, you just stepped off a train. We've taken you into the car. It's all a bit dodgy, but how is your first journey over the water? Is it literally your first journey over the water to this side of the land from Edinburgh?
Yeah, I don't think I've been in Fife before, but the car park is lovely.
Yeah.
It's a great experience. Just if you're a new listener, by the way, Michel, someone that we've come into contact with recently, you've been in the Facebook group for a while, Michel, and you produce a 3D binaural audio drama programme. Your show that we heard was called Overnight, and we were waxing lyrical about it recently, so... It turns out you're actually in Scotland. Where are you from originally?
I'm from Montreal in Canada, and I moved to Scotland 6 years ago now. I've been in Edinburgh.
Good choice.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. It's unbelievable how much I love that city. But it's been great. You know, we've done a lot of traveling across Europe and everything, so it's just a brilliant city.
So tell us a wee bit then about... The oil field. I mentioned this on the other show. I always want to say the oil field. It's just me. It's just, I don't know, it's the way my mouth works. But
different accent.
I think it's that. We'll put it down to that. There's no owls in Scotland, just oil. That's not true. So the oil field. What's the background with that? Who else is involved? And how long have you been on the go? And what sort of other stuff are you involved in?
The owl field, it's something that I kind of came up with the idea a few years ago. I kind of came across these binaural recordings, and as soon as I heard them, I just immediately wanted to start making stories with that. Just to address the name, because I know you're struggling there, but basically, if you've seen the logo for the owl field, it's actually a barn owl, and barn owls are... the, you know, one of nature's best listeners, and so much so that they're actually used for research into sound localization. So I thought that was quite a fitting approach to branding, and the field aspect of the name just kind of refers to the fact that barn owls tend to live in fields, but
not barns.
Yeah, no, not barns, not not forests. You know, they go after kind of their field prey, but they can localize sound to within 3 degrees of kind of the vertical and horizontal planes. So that's kind of the reason I went with that. It's not oil based. In terms of you know, who works at the owl field, it's really just myself at the moment. I tend to use the kind of royal we when promoting the owl field, but. At the moment, it's mostly just myself, and I'm certainly looking to expand in the near future. kind of bring on more people and hopefully be able to produce more and quicker and longer productions as well. But otherwise, in terms of kind of what I do some freelance work with production sound mixing and some composing for advertisements and that kind of thing, film, short films and that kind of stuff.
On the website, the program that we'd listened to, the audio drama that we'd listened to, was called Overnight, and that is available for free. But as far as I can see, you're not actually podcasting your work. So have you created other shows that aren't free? And is this like, you know, are you sort of building a business model around it?
Yeah, absolutely. The goal for myself really is to try to make a business out of it. My kind of business model is essentially give a little bit away for free and then put a price tag on the rest. I think I know it's a hotly debated topic in the audio drama community, how much to give away for free or whether you should charge at all. Me personally, I think it gives a good impression if you put a price tag on your work. So that's kind of what I've decided to do. It makes you kind of appear to be a professional, even though, you know, the quality of the work might be the same as somebody who does give away their content for free. But of course, the bottom line is, if you want to give your content away for free, you certainly are entitled to. No one can tell you can't do that.
There are a few people that have tried, saying, stop it, stop giving work away for free. Mm. We'll never be millionaires at this rate. Like, well, sorry, I've got to tell you this, but we might not be millionaires anytime soon, even if we do start charging. So it's a difficult one. I can understand where they come from, but yeah, there's a few people that are really adamant that we've got to start charging from now and see how that goes. But obviously that's not feasible at the moment, is it?
Well, I mean, I come from kind of a, you know, I tried to get into film scoring for a bit, and that community is really just decimated. It's completely devalued because there's just so many composers who want to get their foot in the door, and they just do everything for free. And now all the producers and directors, that's what they expect. They're kind of taken aback by when you give something away for free.
I didn't realize it was as widespread a problem as that, actually.
I think it is in all fields, all creative fields, you know, photography as well. Everyone expects you to, you know, can I use, you know, you always see people asking, can I use your pictures for free? So it's the same thing with film scoring as well. But, you know, since we're on the topic, I suppose I was actually having a look. You guys had Domin interview Tim from Audioflix last week. Hopefully, you know, that model could potentially work. I think it probably is the best hope at this point, kind of amalgamating all the different works and charging a subscription. Because for the Owlfield, I do have 6 productions on the website. And as you alluded to, the Overnight is the only one that's free. I do charge that for the other ones. It's, you know, it's a small price, but it's always difficult to get people to just, you know, actually go ahead and input their credit card details and actually, you know, go through the checkout process, regardless of how affordable you make your productions.
So what's your vision of the next year or 2 years or even 5 years? How do you hope this is going to go for you?
I mean, I do really want to, as I mentioned before, I do really want to expand, and I do want to make this kind of viable business. And I really do think that kind of that subscription model will probably end up being the best hope for the audio drama community, in the way that, you know, Audible, there's a lot of different, you know, Netflix, and they all kind of have that same kind of model. So if I'm able to kind of expand the business, and I'm kind of approaching it in the same way any startup would. So, you know, eventually I'm hoping to look for investors and then bringing on new people, getting kind of a marketing team and everything together to really be able to push forward and promote what could be a really exciting new format for the publishing industry.
In terms of actually making the stuff then, you know, I first kind of encountered binaural audio, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago. I was at the Science Centre in Glasgow, of all places, and, you know, you're walking around, it's like an exhibition, and I think it's, you know, a lot of it's designed for kids, which suited me just fine. And there was a pair of headphones, like a pair of over-ear headphones, and it was a wee bit of information on binaural audio. So I put the headphones on, and the first one was like a, it was like getting a haircut, basically. So you had the scissors snipping round, and I could hear it, you know, unlike, and if the listener's not experienced binaural audio before, instead of it being stereo in each ear, you could literally hear it right round the back of your head, right round the front of your head. The second audio piece was like a racing track, basically. So there was cars racing. It was as if you were in the middle of the racing track. Mm. You could hear these cars racing right around you. And then latterly, you know, I was studying at university and one of my classmates had a project, a binaural project. So they used a dummy head. And again, for the listener, you know, these dummy heads, literally a human dummy head type that a mannequin would be wearing in a shop, and it's got microphones in each ear, and that... As I know, that is a way of recording binaural audio, but I believe that's not actually the way you went about recording your productions, was it?
Yeah, that's right. The I think the production you're referring to, if you've not heard it, it's definitely the one to potentially start with. If you just go on YouTube and search for binaural haircut, or no, binaural barbershop, I think that's potentially the first one I listened to as well. But you're absolutely right. It's using a binaural mannequin head, and the two microphones are placed in each ear, or one microphone in each ear. And it just mimics the way that humans localize sound in this 3D world that we live in. So if you imagine, say, a sound on the right side of your head, that sound will hit your right ear before it hits your left ear. And to hit the left ear, it actually has to go around your head and bounce off the walls and all these different things. So your brain calculates how it can kind of compare how the sound hit your ears, and that's kind of how we can localize sound. And there's kind of two ways to make this kind of 3D experience. You can use that binaural head, or you can use 3D audio software, and the latter is what I went with. There's a few reasons for that, but my background is kind of a musician's background. I studied some sound design and, mixing and editing and all that kind of thing. So I really wanted to have a lot of control over the post-production. And with a binaural head recording, there's not really much you can do. Because if you imagine, say, you're recording some musicians in a room and you just put the binaural head there, whatever you record is kind of, that's the final product. And of course, it can be an amazing thing having a live recording like that, and there's a lot of energy and spontaneity involved. But I wanted to do more of that kind of studio recording where you record all the instruments separately, and then you can EQ the snare drum or put some, reverb on the guitar and things like that, and then place them in the mix, because that was kind of my skill set. So I really wanted to use this 3D audio software to be able to... have more control over the final sound and create that kind of cinematic quality, that kind of polished final sound. So there's a few other reasons. I don't know if you want to get into those as well, but
it sounds to me like there's parallels with like the decisions you make if you're going to studio record something or field record it, basically, except, mm-hmm. It's looking at the things that you've it's almost like you say getting a band into the studio, isn't it? I'd mm-hmm. imagine.
Yeah, if you think about using a audio drum, or sorry, using a binaural head to record audio drama, essentially, kind of what you're doing is you're having your actors. You would do a lot of pre-production, and you would have your actors kind of play out the scene around the head, and so the listener would get kind of the experience of being at the center of live theater. But for me personally, what I wanted to do was make the listener feel like they're actually in the middle of a film rather than live theater. And, when you're using a binaural head, there can be a little bit of difficulties working with movement around the head. Small movements can be quite exaggerated, and there can be a little bit of phase differences when, say, a sound source is moving around a binaural head. So a big thing for me was with the Owl Field, I wanted the listener to feel like they were moving throughout the scene. And in order to do that, I have to move sound around the listener's head. So that was a big factor in my decision to use 3D audio as well, because I wanted to have control over the movement of the sounds, even kind of in the post-production process.
I suppose, that's a consideration. You're literally making the listener the main character in Overnight. I don't know if that's something you've continued in your other shows. I'll ask you about that in a second. But if you were making a binaural show where the listener wasn't the main character, I suppose in a way that might affect your story, because what's the reason then for using binaural audio? Because in most audio dramas, we as the listener are a spectator. We're not involved in the show.
A third party.
Yeah, we're more of a, you know, a camera, if you went down the film analogy.
Yeah.
So is it always first person in your shows, or have you experimented with different types of story?
No, the first person experience is the original reason I wanted to do this. Really put the listener in this first person perspective, with everything in the story happening around the listener. If you use binaural recording for audio drama and the listener isn't the main character, then it's just a new way to create this this mix, I suppose, around the listener. And it would still be really interesting to listen to, of course. But putting the listener in the shoes of the main character and having this first-person perspective was the original reason I wanted to do this. And so, you know, there's a lot of, you know, considerations when writing for this kind of style. You know, for instance, if the listener is the main character and I want them to feel like they really are in the story, then I have to kind of limit the amount of identifiable references to the listener. So, for instance, I don't want to give the listener's character a voice, because then they'll feel like, well, that's not my voice. And one of the considerations I had to deal with early on was I tested out one of the productions where the listener had a name, and I tried to use a name that could be both for male or female, but some of my listeners were coming back and saying, well, it was kind of annoying when the other characters were referring to me by this name, and it was taking me out of it, because, you know, my name's not Casey or whatever name I had chosen.
Yeah.
So those are kind of things that I have to work around in order to make it work, but as I said, all of my productions are at very least first-person perspective, because I really want the listener to feel like they're in the story.
Two questions then. Like, when you're making binaural 3D audio drama, presumably, and I'm coming at it from an ignorant perspective here because I've never done it, presumably it takes a lot longer than just making a standard audio drama. And also I'm interested in, like, the software you use. What is it?
The software I use at the moment is it's by a company called Wave Arts, and it's called Panorama. It's all right. It's, you know, it's affordable, and it was able to, you know, I was able to practice with it and work around different issues that came up. I'd say you really have to kind of have some sound design experience to work with it, especially if you start moving sound around. It's pretty good for if you're just putting sound in spots and leaving them there. But when it comes to the movement, you kind of, it's not ideal, I'd say. There's a lot of software that's out there that's, I think, probably what I would eventually upgrade to if I had an opportunity to. But it works, you know, there's no question, and I'm really happy that it was affordable, that I could kind of get started with it. What was the other question?
Hey, how does it take a lot longer, basically?
Yeah, it does, for sure. Especially the way that the format that I use with the first-person perspective and everything, I have to move everything kind of around the listener's head. So it's not just a matter of, you know, left-right panning. I have to deal with kind of three dimensions, right? And
I take it it's not just as easy as having a sound happening on the right-hand side of the head and then having that same sound with a bit less treble and a split second later on the left-hand side of the head to replicate the sound hitting the right ear first and then hitting the... You know, I've been hit by that revelation, that's how you do it, because I've tried to do it in the past and given up.
Hmm. No, the software actually does that for you. They use algorithms to mimic the way that we hear sounds, so you can just simply place the sound source in the space that you want, and I kind of, you have to mix while using headphones, and then when you do so, you'll hear the sound as if, you know, that spot in space is where the sound is coming from. I know it's a little bit, it's much easier if you see kind of maybe the demo for the software or something, but it really is just placing the sound in the 3D space, maybe adjusting its vertical position, but it's as simple as that. But of course, the way I record, you know, the actors and everything, I do everything separately. So I have to, you know, I have to put the sound source of the voice, and then I'll have to put maybe the footsteps in the same spot, and then some Foley sounds for, you know, their clothing or whatever they're doing. And then if I want to move that character around, I have to move all three. So it is a longer process, no question about that. But it's incredibly rewarding, and it's so much fun to do and listen to, so it's not a concern of mine, really.
Do you have to have it that there's a sound to the left, then no sound, then dead ahead, and then the next time you hear the sound, it's to the right? Or can it actually move as a wave, if you know what I mean? Like, you can hear the person moving across the room and behind you in a continuous movement and a continuous sound. Can you do that?
Absolutely, yeah. That's wow. If you use automation, you can you move the sound, you know, if you want to go, say, the character moves from your left ear to in front of you to the right ear. It's a continuous kind of, you kind of draw the pattern into your software.
And this is beyond the normal panning, of course, which makes it go from left to right, but to actually get that change.
Yeah, it's the same thing as panning. You know, if you were panning in the production, in a post-production, and you were automating that panning, except that you're, you know, you would be moving in a kind of arc around the head, and you would draw that in to the software's automation, or to the software's parameters, I suppose. But yeah, it would be a continuous thing, and that's the reason I use 3D software rather than the binaural mannequin head, is because I want to be able to draw that pattern in very delicately and ensure that it works, because there's still some issues with 3D audio and binaural audio where not everyone hears it the same way. So that's why it's important to kind of be aware of what might cause some problems. As I mentioned earlier, there's some kind of audio shifts that can happen. Any movements can be kind of exaggerated and colored strangely. So that way, it at least helps that you can make adjustments in post-production, rather than if you're using a mannequin head, whatever movement the, say, your actor does, that's what's imprinted on the audio track, and there's not really anything you can do after.
When you're mixing these shows, I'm interested to know what you're looking at, because I'm assuming it's not like your traditional DAW where you're looking at a waveform running along in quite a linear manner. I would imagine, I could be totally wrong here, I imagine you'd be looking at like almost like a sonar dial. You know, it might look like a room, you might have a character in the middle and place sounds around them. Is that totally off the mark?
That's exactly it, yeah. If you picture, I mean, for the software that I use, and I think they all kind of do this, you imagine, say you've got a little mannequin head, and it's a bird's eye view perspective right above that mannequin head, and you're exactly right. It's like a sonar type thing to show you the distance, so you can place the sound in the particular spot around the head, and then where you put it, you know, in relation to the head is kind of, you're choosing the distance and everything, and then separately you'll choose the elevation. So is it above the listener's head, or is it below the listener's head?
I'm excited by this.
Yeah.
You know, our audio drama Aftermath, I don't know if you've, yeah. I think you mentioned that you've heard it, to our chagrin.
But, I'm, you know, wincing. There's a guy who makes 3D audio who's listened to season one Aftermath.
Well, yeah. Well, scene two of episode one, I was responsible for it. It was in the our early days, obviously. But we had a lot of panning left, right, every character crossed the room three times, once this way, once that way. And then we calmed down a lot and said, right, no more panning. And now, maybe a bit more panning again, and this time in 3D. I'm quite excited to try this.
Yeah, I mean, when I got my hands on the software finally, because it was a while, quite frankly, when I first wanted to start doing it, I was trying to make my own binaural head because I thought that was the way to do it. And, you know, eventually I realized kind of it wasn't the way that I wanted to do it, and I got my hands on it. But just even just listening to the, say, the YouTube demo for these types of software, and you've got your headphones on, and it's just like, if you've not heard binaural audio, you should really make an effort to go listen to it, because it's akin to the same experience or the same feeling as watching a 3D film for the first time. I mean, you just want to reach out and grab the sounds, because they just feel like they really are there in front of you. A number of listeners, one of the productions I have called Infiltrator, it's kind of this action recon mission type thing, and you're sneaking around the enemy headquarters, and there's a car that pulls up, and I make it sound like it's outside. And without fault, all my listeners have come back and saying, I opened my eyes because I thought, why is there a car in my back garden? So it really does fool you sometimes, you know. When my wife is listening to the recordings, she constantly opens her eyes because she thinks that I've just opened the door and come into the room.
I had the same issue when I listened to overnight. You know, mm-hmm. there were sounds where I thought, that's like, you know, that's... I wasn't scared, honestly. it was just, there was subtle sounds that I thought were outside of the production. It's just amazing how it works, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To put those sounds at such a distance from you, and to literally be in your ears is, you know, it's something I knew existed, but I didn't fully think about this great potential that you're kind of doing with this production.
I listened to it walking home at night, 10:30 at night, walking home from work, and looking about me like left right, no right, just concentrate on it, but at the same time keep an eye out because someone's going to jump out on you, you know. And I haven't walked home at night since, because I was a little bit unnerved and glanced over my shoulder the whole time, like I could have been doing this in a room at home with the door locked, you know.
There's no question that there's so much potential here to really give the listener a thrill. And that's, with the first few productions I did, that was certainly my goal. So like I said, with Infiltrator, I really wanted to make it kind of action-oriented. There's things flying past your ear, and, you know, you're kind of sneaking around and hoping that you're not discovered. As well, there's a production called The Jungle, and in that one, you're you know, just lost in the jungle at night. It's pitch black, and there's, you know, there's predators about, and just anything that can kind of give people a little bit of a fright, but you know, most listeners come away feeling quite exhilarated. You know, there's a real vulnerability to being kind of at the mercy of the producer, because the sounds can come at you at any volume, from any direction, from at any speed, or you never know when the sound's going to come up. I mean, in Overnight, I could have made it considerably worse, and I'm considering a potentially a sequel to Overnight that maybe takes it to another level of fear.
So I suppose, you know, the listener, if they're like me, is probably thinking, like, this sounds really good and it might be something I'd like to at least have a shot of at some point in my life. And binaural heads, I've heard, are very expensive. Is there a reason for that? And I wonder, like, the microphones that are in the ears of a binaural head, do they have to be a specific type of microphone? Do people make their own binaural heads? Like, what's the deal with all that?
The main binaural head that most people use is I think it's a German company called Neumann, those are very expensive. I think it's like £8,000 or euros or something like that.
I'm out.
Yeah. Well, there's more affordable ones. They're probably not the same quality, but I'm not really sure about the microphones in the ears. I think that typically they tend to be omnidirectional microphones, but I've seen setups where people, they have a mannequin head and they'll just put two microphones where the ears would be, whereas that kind of Neumann head is, the microphones are actually in the ears, it's part of the head. I tried to make my own and it was just, it didn't really work out. I bought my mannequin head and tried to make my own little setup, but it wasn't really at par with what you can purchase.
I take it a melon with two zooms masking taped around the melon, wouldn't be the same thing.
I was going to say, after this, we'll go down to like Topshop, we'll brick the window, get a mannequin, we'll put two blue snowballs in the ears and see how good that sounds.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of different microphones. There are some microphones, I believe, that don't even have a mannequin head. It's one of them, I think, is just this big ball, and it records, it still ends up recording binaurally. But there are, in terms of software, there's a range. Some are better than others, some are maybe easier to use than others. The one I have is it was only, I think, a couple £100, so it was, you know, it was a good choice to just get started with, but those do tend to be pretty expensive at the moment.
Isn't it amazing the diversity of audio fiction, production-wise? How we can do all sorts of things and there are different production values that can all work. You know, they're all feasible. Like, you've got stuff like Serial and the Black Tapes, and they are just voices. They don't even have scene changes other than the same bit of music. There's no huge production value there. And you've got stuff like Edict Zero, We're Alive. Yep, they got their mention this week. And then there's this stuff we're talking about here, that with the binaural stuff, which sounds just wonderful. It sounds great, and it's another level of production. And with all the things I've just described, there's stuff out there for everyone that's really good to listen to. I guess the point is that there's a level of production for everyone. You know, you don't have to be put off by the fact that you can't do binaural recordings at this point if you're just getting into it for the first time. You know, start off with something that is just a conversation in a room, use a bit of panning, and who knows, maybe you're doing the next Owl Field in a few years from now.
Yeah, and the thing is as well, you don't even have to work in stereo, do you? You know, like, people create great stuff in mono still, so it's just down to taste. Like, there's no right or wrong way, I think, you know. Yeah. People could get creative with whatever way they work, and you know, you could do a good job or you could do a bad job of anything.
Yeah, it's like the movie world as well, you know. What was it, Waterworld with Kevin Costner? It cost $500 million and it took like $8,000 or something. Ridiculous. And it was the most expensive movie of all time at the time, I think. And then you get something like Blair Witch Project or even 28 Days Later, which cost a couple of grand to make. And it was the story. I guess that's it. It's the story, isn't it, that's the main thing, and the characters. And as long as you're writing something that's good, then you should be able to come up with something that's decent as well.
Yeah, everyone's got their own kind of skill set, right? So a lot of people are in audio drama because they wanted to practice their acting or voice acting. And a lot of people are aspiring writers, or they just want to write plays or that kind of thing. And I'm kind of in it from the production side, and I wanted to, you know, gave me as well a format to use my film scoring talents, and I already had that kind of set up already from my background. So, you know, I really like editing and sound design and all those kind of things. So, yeah, there's ways to, as long as you're finding a way to work with what you love to do, then that's really what's rewarding about it.
Yeah, if someone's listening, you know, and their passion is to sit down and write and just write, and they hate editing, then obviously this isn't for them. But you know, people like myself, I'm much more interested nowadays in production. I love the thought of this. You know, I'd love to hook up again and see, you know, just have a look at what you do and how it works and that. I think that'd be great. I don't think it's something I would be doing myself, at least for a few years, because obviously we've got projects. And I don't imagine it's the sort of thing you just dip your toe in, really, is it? Because you're going to have to learn.
Yeah, it takes some work. It takes some work to get used to the software and understanding what works and what doesn't work. It, you know, I discovered binaural recording about 2 years ago, and I've only launched the Owl Field in August. But absolutely, and I'm looking forward to working with other people as well. I mean, my goal isn't to be a writer or voice actor. I really want to do the post-production and the music. So, you know, going forward, I want to work with outside writers and work with their material and see what they want to do with the format. Because there are, you know, as I said, there's considerations with writing in this first-person perspective. And also, you want to take advantage of the 3D audio. You don't want to just have it be 3D audio and not, you know, find a way to make it exciting or something. So it's interesting. I mean, with the next project I'm going to be working on, it's going to be with an outside writer. And we've already had discussions about how to approach this, because it's certainly something that you have to work on, working around the different restrictions that come with this perspective and this format.
I'm interested, like, just before we move on to, because I want to talk about awards, because I know that you're up for one. With your, like, you've got voice actors working in your productions, do you record those guys yourself? Do you work with remote voice actors? How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, I personally don't have a studio myself. You know, when I try to do voice acting myself, I create this kind of homemade blanket fort type thing. And so if I was to record local actors, I would have to take them to a local studio. And of course, that there's fees associated with that. And I found that it was actually easier to find people who fit the roles I was looking from the wealth of voice actors online. Many people have their own setup that works quite well. So I found most of the voice actors online, for sure. And what's nice is that I found them through sites that usually they deal with the contracts kind of built into the agreements when you work with them. Because I want to make sure that my actors are, you know, paid what they consider a fair amount, especially if I'm trying to make money off the productions. So, you know, some of the voice actors are my friends locally, and they're willing to kind of step into my blanket fort. But most of them I do find online because, as I said, with the 3D audio software that I use, I can just kind of put the voices into the 3D environment however I want, and then find a way to kind of put those voice actors together.
And that's another way you've freed yourself from the binaural head, I suppose, isn't it? Because you wouldn't really have that option. The only thing I could think of, if you had the binaural head, again, I've got no experience of this, so this might be stupid, but playing a voice out a speaker and using the binaural head in the room and just, I don't know, the speaker's your actor, would that be a way around that? Or?
Well, I suppose. I think the beauty of using actors around a binaural head is that they can work together in the scene, because if you've got a binaural head, it's really all about pre-production. You really need to set the scene first and have your actors be, you know, ready to work together and know their script and everything, and then you just kind of hit record and go. With the work I do, I have to kind of make sure that the voices work together. There's ways to do that. I haven't done this yet, but you can work through, you know, there's a few programs out there, you know, you can go on Skype if you really need to and have the actors kind of do the scene at the same time, but that makes it a little bit more difficult to record a clean recording. It's very important for my voice actors to have as little room reverberation as possible, so that I can put them in a room that I construct and I apply reverb to that particular environment. So I always ask my actors to do as much as they can to kind of dampen the room atmosphere, and then it's just a matter of kind of editing their performances to make sure that the actors kind of do sound like they are really in the same place.
So the award that you're up for then, could you tell us a bit about that? Because I know it's a pretty big deal, isn't it?
Yeah, it's actually an incredible honour. And basically what it is that it's a future book, it's part of the bookseller.com. And the Future Book Conference it's the largest in Europe for digital publishing. So, you know, all the kind of industry insiders from the big publishing houses come together and kind of discuss ideas for the future of books and publishing. And so I was very fortunate to just have, you know, excellent timing, essentially. And because when I launched in August, I did some basic promotion. I sent out a few tweets and a couple press releases to different journalists and stuff. And one individual came back and she was really nice and, you know, had great words of encouragement. And I looked into it and it turns out she was part of this conference. And I just happened to have kind of launched the business in time for the, just in time for the deadline. So I gave it a shot and a few weeks later it came back and I was shortlisted. But what's so amazing about this is that for the particular category that I'm in, I get to go down to London and present at the conference in front of the attendees about the OWL field, what we do, and how it might impact the industry in the future.
Wow. So it's not only a great opportunity for yourself and your skills, but for the medium as well, going there. I mean, are you up against other audio dramas? Have you made sure that Hadron Gospel ever aren't in there? Because if they are, that's it. There's no point in going.
It's all different types. There's a lot of emphasis in the last few years about ebooks and Kindles and mobile technology and technology that help authors kind of write books. But there's no question that absolutely it's not just an opportunity for the OWL field, but for audio drama in general, on the back of the success of Lock and Key.
So does it seem to you then that the the progress is all with audio drama. It's starting off with audio fiction, maybe with books, but we're slowly moving towards, as you say, with Lock and Key, towards the sort of thing we do then. Are we seeing the rise that we've been talking about for so long?
Well, it certainly seems that way, yeah. I think that there's more emphasis this year at the Future Book Conference for audio entertainment. And, you know, the growth of the industry is quite clear. There's lots of statistics out there about how sales have been increasing, and more and more people are discovering not just audiobooks, but audio drama. And so I think, you know, as something like virtual reality comes out, a lot more people might be looking into different forms of entertainment. Because, you know, if you look at Lock and Key, for example, a lot of people, you know, love those the graphic novels. And this is the audio drama, you know, it has been presented as a new way for those readers to experience the content. So one of the ways I'm going to present audio drama at the conference is that it is a new way for authors to present their work to their existing fans, not just authors, but publishers as well. So it could potentially be an increase for a new revenue stream for them. And particularly for the Owl Field, you know, I'm putting the listener in the story. So it's even another additional way to give the listeners a way to be in the content that they love.
What's the process for, you know, winning these awards? Is it judges, is it a panel, or is it a vote?
Yeah, there's three judges. And what happens is, first we all the shortlistees do a short presentation. And then they kind of grill you about business viability and potential impact and unique selling points and those kind of things. So, I mean, to be perfectly frank, if I win one of the awards, I'll be very proud, obviously. But just the fact that I'm going down and being able to be a part of this conference is just it's just unbelievable. It's hard to describe how much of an honor it is.
When is it then?
It's on December 4th. So I'll be heading down December 3rd and getting a hotel near there.
I was going to say, it's a wee while away yet, but it's not.
Yeah.
It wasn't too long ago that I had 2 months to prepare, and now I've only got one.
Yeah.
But no, I've been prepping. I've been discussing with, you know, Fred, and I spoke with Domine, and I'm looking to speak with Tim from Audioflix, yourselves as well. I'm looking forward to Monique and Matthew Boudreau. And
I've heard of all these people. I'm talking to someone that's not you, Matthew, that knows these people by name. I think it's great. It's wonderful.
I'm pretty new, frankly, to the audio drama community, but I'm speaking to as many producers as I possibly can to get their input into where audio drama is headed, what they think is the viable route to market that a startup needs to have. So, I mean, if you're listening to this, please get in touch, because I'm looking to get as many opinions as possible.
Yeah, do that. We're just like, if the listener's not on Facebook or anything like that, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Well, the website is owlfield.com, owlfield.com. And you can catch me on Twitter as well, which is just, you know, twitter.com/owlfield.
But we'll put your full address and telephone number on the website as well.
great. Come see me.
Yeah. I had one more question. We talked about Serial and Black Tapes and stuff. Do you think that might be, because it's very easy to listen to and get into and produce, do you think that's the way some of the general public, that's the route they'll need to take to get into the more heavy stuff that we like? Like, it's easy to consume, so it gets them used to it. And I asked this because some of the reviews for Lock and Key, the ones that weren't 5 stars, most of them were, the ones that weren't, it was because they couldn't accustomize themselves to it. You know, they couldn't acclimatize to the whole people doing things around them and not just being expositional, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was too much for them at first. And do you think something like Serial and Black Tapes will ease them in?
I mean, possibly. But I don't think that there's one way that's better than the other. Really, it's all about how they're introduced to it. If they go into it, you know, I think this was discussed, but if they go into it thinking it's an audiobook, then they'll be taken aback by all the different characters and trying to keep track. But if they're kind of prepared for what it's going to be, then I don't see how anybody would potentially have an issue with it. Now, there's going to be people who just generally don't like it anyways, just as there's people who don't like audiobooks being maybe too dry.
Yeah.
It depends on how it's presented to them, whether that be somebody introducing it to them and explaining what it is, or, you know, if Lock and Key were presented as something other than an audiobook, which I think was maybe the problem.
We talked about that last week, didn't we?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So we were saying, people were going on there saying, oh, this isn't an audiobook at all. It's like, we know.
I may have formed my opinion based on your opinion. So.
The first person ever. Right. I'm always conscious that we talk about the Black Tapes as if they're like not that highly produced. I mean, that sort of stuff is still really good production and, you know, takes a lot of time. I know you don't mean it like that. I'm just more clarifying that.
Yeah, there's no magical soundscapes that paint a picture of a mountain at night or stuff like that. And there's no swirling machines, and you're not imagining going down the internet and electronic sounds and all that kind of stuff. That's really what I mean. I'm sure there's quite a lot of hours put into the Black Tapes, and it's something I'm still listening to at the moment, actually. So, yeah, no, I'm not saying it's not badly produced or anything. It's more...
It's a different animal, isn't it?
Yeah, it's simplified in a way.
The micromanagement of a soundscape. Every, you know, hand going into a pocket or a foot scuff when you get bogged down in building a scene and you're doing all that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's still a great show, still really well produced.
But it's more straightforward in terms of it's someone talking, someone else is talking on the end of the phone. You're not having people walking around or walking in and out of doors and opening cupboards and loading guns in just the right way, so it's not silly, but you know what's going on. You know what I mean? There's not a lot of stuff happening as such. It's very dialogue heavy, which I love.
Yeah, that's kind of one of the challenges that the Owlfield will be facing is I'm kind of almost competing more with virtual reality and Netflix than I am with other audio dramas in terms of, you know, listenership. Because I know, Matthew, you wrote an article on about why you should be listening to audio drama. And I actually, I didn't disagree with what you wrote, but for The Owlfield, I had to disagree with one section, which was about how it's great for kind of listening while doing something else. So for the Owlfield, obviously, we wear a pair of headphones and you close your eyes. So you can't do that while you're commuting to work in a car.
Or you can, but you'll only do it once.
Or if, you know, you're doing, you know, if you're exercising or something and jogging down the street or something, you just can't do it. So
maybe that was my problem walking home from work then, that I was listening to it. And while I had it up full and I was taking in everything that was going on, part of the thing that unnerved me was I was having to cross the street and also look around to make sure I wasn't attacked, because I was set on edge by taking in what I was taking in. So maybe I would be better listening to it again in a dark room with my eyes closed and the door locked.
That's what I did, and you know, I wouldn't lie in my bed and listen to any audio drama, but I knew it being binaural that I couldn't move about and do stuff. I just wanted to totally be focused on that. So yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying, you know.
Yeah, the perception, you know, with audiobooks and audio drama is that they are great for multitasking. And with The Owlfield, it's kind of a barrier I've got to break through and really change the perception that listening to audio drama or listening to The Owlfield can be its own activity. And frankly, it kind of needs to be, just like you would sit down and, you know, watch a Netflix television show or something. You could do that. You know, we spend enough time on staring at screens during the day. We spend, you know, 8 to 9 hours a day on your laptop or your mobile or whatever. So, you know, you can go home, just put on a pair of headphones, shut everything out, close your eyes, and just immerse yourself in this story that you yourself are a part of. So that's kind of the market that I need to kind of go for is the people who want a form of audio entertainment that they don't necessarily want to listen to while doing something else.
Yeah, I mean, it's going down a rabbit hole, but there is a there is a conception nowadays or a habit for people to cram as much into their day as possible. And although audio drama is brilliant for multitasking, like you're having entertainment, you're doing tasks, there is a time, I think, where you just need to shut everything out, like you say, and say, like, I'm taking half an hour, I'm just going to lie down here and do one thing and enjoy it and not feel like I have to be doing three things at once. So, yeah, it's a great vacuum there that you can, you know, it's a great USP for you going down there to try and fill, because it's a totally different take on I think what most of us are doing on audio drama, which is great. You know, it's great to see that other angle.
Would it be fair to say that you'll probably keep the binaural experience shorter than longer, like 10, 15 minutes tops, rather than having an hour's worth? Because I would say in today's society, you're going to struggle to have anybody sit and close their eyes for an hour without sleeping. You know, like, yeah. they won't just sit there, and no matter how good it is, they'll start to get itchy feet after a while. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can't even watch films nowadays without starting to want to get up and move around and do other things and stuff. So short and, you know, sweet, decisive is probably the way forward for you. Yeah,
there was a good moment when I was speaking to somebody who had I was explaining the concept of the Owl Field, and I was talking about overnight and how most of the productions right now are just, you know, overnight is even under 10 minutes, and some of them are 15 approximately. And she said to me, oh, that'd be great for, you know, at my office we have those kind of break areas where you can kind of close the cubicle around you kind of thing and just have like a 15-minute nap or something. And she said, that would be perfect if you don't want to have a nap, you know, you just have that 15-minute immersion, immersive experience. And that really kind of confirmed that shorter is potentially better. If the Owl Field does expand, I do want to, you know, try longer ones. The next project I'm working on is probably going to be a half an hour audio drama, but there's no question that shorter could potentially be something that people do prefer. It's still something I'm still assessing what people prefer, but there's no question that you know, there's room for shorter productions.
Yeah, definitely. And if you've got the time, then you can listen to two or three on the trot if that's your thing as well.
Yeah, exactly. And especially if I do end up making kind of a, you know, a serial kind of podcast style where they come out in a series. Yeah, then it gives people the option, like, you can just listen to one or you can listen to five. It's up to you.
So just before we get wrapped up then, it's been a great conversation. I am a bit conscious of time. We had just a bit of news in audio drama this week, as we like to go through when we have the time. So there's an album out. Kevin Hartnell, who works with, you know, many people in audio drama, he works with us, but namely Campfire Radio, so he's releasing, or he has released, an album, and that's for sale. I think you could get it. It's kind of pay what you want. I think you could pay as little as $5, but you could pay as much as you want for that, and he's given all that money to Campfire Radio so that they could continue to fund new projects. As far as I know, that's the case. I think it is. So, great gesture there. Kevin's brilliant. You know, he's so prolific. He seems to be putting out music all the time.
Yeah.
And like I say, that's a really nice gesture. So, got myself a copy. I do a lot of writing at work nowadays, and I like to listen to music when I write, but I don't like to listen to music with vocals, because it confuses me. So I like ambient stuff. I listen to a lot of Mogwai and Boards of Canada. Huh. Boards of Canada, they're from Edinburgh, I think, but they're kind of ambient music.
Right.
So I've got this album now, and I'm adding that to the queue of stuff that I'm going to write to. Maybe take a dark and sinister turn, because it's creepy. But
on a very brief side note, that's something I've been doing a lot of recently, is doing more writing whilst listening to ambient music, like doing some fantasy writing and listening to World of Warcraft style ambience, and so I find that's helpful.
You don't write Valenhai scripts to, like, Ice Cube's The Predator?
Yeah, FTP,
I mean,
by NWA. Yeah,
I listen to film scores all the time. That's one of my favourite types of music, obviously from my background, but yeah, it can be distracting if there's vocals, and it can, you know, you kind of want to sing along and stuff, but
gets noisy.
Especially if you're listening to something like the soundtrack from Inception, and you're doing something, it just, whatever you were doing is now the most epic thing you could possibly do.
Yeah.
I don't want to digress too much, but sorry. My mum and dad in the, would it have been the early 90s when Dances with Wolves came out? Speaking of Costner films,
yeah.
Dances with Wolves, they bought the CD soundtrack of Dances with Wolves and they used to listen to it in the house.
Why are you laughing about that?
A weird moment in my life. you're right to that, don't you, Michelle?
Talk about opposite ends of the spectrum. You know, the worst film in history and the best film Costner ever made. High
Water
moments.
World. Yeah, he had gills in Dances with Wolves. He had
Dances
a fox
with fish.
Too. He had a pet fox, I think.
Yeah, he did.
Anyway, big rabbit hole there. Wanted to give a couple of nods on the old Patreon, because Umberto Lenzi, what a guy, he ups his pledge every week, and I'm going to have to tell him to stop, because apparently he's living on the streets now.
Right.
Because he gives us all his money. So, Umberto, thanks, but, you know, calm down, you don't have to give us it all.
Well, tell him to calm down after Christmas.
Yeah, Robert's got a young child, I suppose. You need to, need to be buying some presents. Thanks also to Ron Rose and Eric Kershaw, two good friends of the show, because they've pledged too. So
yes.
I think we're up to 12 nights of the pledge.
We'll need to buy a bigger table. Get them all sat around it.
Yeah, big thanks. Audiodramaproduction.com/support. I think that's where you can find the nights of the pledge. They're all listed there.
Yeah.
So Eric, he put out an audio drama this month as well. Good to see so many new audio dramas just now, because I know Dane Leonardson, he brought out The Fall. He's another big Edict Zero fan, and he's just released his first audio drama.
I knew I liked him.
Our pal Austin Beach as well. I know he's... You know, by the time this show goes out, he will potentially have his audio drama out. Or if not, it won't be far away. So that's his first as well. So
yeah.
All these new shows coming out, which is great. Ron, who's pledged, I think they're yet to release their first one. He works with Justin. So all these new audio dramas. I think Ron also gave us a review on iTunes, by the way, which we hugely appreciate.
Wonderful. Thank you. Unless it was one star.
No, five. We only accept fives.
Yeah.
We also had an iTunes review for Aftermath, because, of course, we had to move Aftermath. We had to move the feed for a number of reasons, and Aftermath now has no reviews, although it does have one now. So thanks very much to Miles Is Online for that, our first review for Aftermath. You look confused,
right.
Robert.
Right, yeah. No, I'm thinking, I was expecting your name. Thanks to M. McLean for that review.
Yeah.
3 stars out of 5.
Yeah, just 3. Maybe 2, actually.
Oh, dear.
Thanks also to Jennifer Dixon, who got in touch via the website. We always like to hear from her. She's a bit of a legend, even if she won't admit it herself. She's in the Big Easy. Big Edict Zero.
Yeah.
That's what I call it. Big Easy.
Mrs. Dockstayer, amongst other things.
So thanks for getting in touch, Jennifer. We love to hear from you. If you want to get in touch with the show, it's podcast@audiodramaproduction.com. That's where you could get in touch with us, tell us stuff, get in touch with Michelle as well, because he wants to hear from everyone. What if you get like 1,000 emails? What will you do then?
I will pay as much attention as I can to each and every single one of them.
We get 1,000 emails a week.
Mostly spam.
We do actually.
Well, if it's marked as spam, I probably will disregard it, I suppose. Is that what you do?
Are you considering talking about one of the spam emails we got?
No, I don't want to mention that one that I screenshotted this morning. Oh, I wish I could, but we don't want the explicit sticker. It was interesting. I'll leave it at that.
Certainly was.
So that's about it, I suppose, for this week. We've got a wee blooper to play us out. That was sent over from Brian Lincoln, because if you're in the audio drama Facebook group, you're probably aware that there's a production on the go just now, 11th Hour Audio Productions. That's the folks at Oral Stage, the folks at Hadron Gospel Hour, Alba Salix. There's a lot of people involved in that.
Yep, audio.
Yeah, we even have like 4 lines ourselves.
Yeah.
So they got together in, did I just say New England? Was it New England? That's a big area. They got together somewhere out there.
North America.
Yeah, North America. they got together, did a bit of field recording. So Brian sent a wee clip over, but I'm really looking forward to hearing that. It's a great collaboration, isn't it?
Yeah, have you done your lines?
done them, yeah?
Yeah,
I get my lines done.
I did mine in my normal accent, well, this accent, and then I did them in an American accent, and then I deleted the American accent ones. And I said, here they are, I'll do them again if you want, because I wasn't too sure. But I enjoyed having a go at it, and it was good to get the equipment set up, because I haven't done any recording at home for a little while. So,
you have now.
Yeah, I've got the bug again. So if anybody needs a Scottish accent, then let me know.
Michelle, closing thoughts for the week?
Well, I just want to say thanks for meeting me at the car park. And it's been a pleasure. And, you know, I'm sure we'll go have a beer or something soon.
Thank you.
Very soon.
We appreciate it.
Although I'm working tonight, so probably not today. Well, not too many, at least.
I could squeeze one in.
Yeah.
Right, okay then, get in touch with us, get in touch with Michelle, and check out the show notes at audiodramaproduction.com, and I guess tune in again next week.
Does that utility truck just drive
backwards? Yeah, it's just in a circle.
It's going forward, back.
I think it's like that alarm that's but next door to us.
Like, is it all like
the security alarm?
Yeah.
Jeez. Where the hell did all our soccer balls go? Keep backing up until we find them.
It's going to be a lawnmower if we keep going at this pace.
All right.